Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker, and woman. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects we all struggle with in this conversation with a reluctant therapist. Good afternoon, Elizabeth.
Good afternoon, Hank. Are we music-free today?
We have music. You got it?
No music?
No music?
There we are.
Okay.
I need to have... That kind of gets me in the mood.
We're grooving.
Yeah, we are grooving. No one ever asked me who this is, too. But
Elizabeth, who's doing this song?
This is the keyboard player from String Cheese Incident. And I think it's called The Bridge. And my friend Mark Hughes found this song for me when I first went on the air doing my issues and ideas 10 years ago. Was it that long ago? And he said, hey, this might be a good song to introduce your show with. And it just stuck. Just like feels good. It feels like kind of that movement that I like in my life as a woman.
But that's not why we're here today.
No, not just to listen to music. We're actually here to celebrate being a woman. And so I'm glad that you are here tuning in this afternoon. I'm glad that Hank is here because I know that you are incredibly pro-woman. I feel it on a daily basis and a weekly basis by how wonderfully you support everything that we do. So thank you for being over there for me today. And it's interesting because the original idea for the show was on the books a long time ago when I looked at kind of how the year was playing out and what shows I wanted to do when. And I knew that Wednesday the 8th was International Women's Day. I said, well, this is perfect. You know, Tuesday before, we can talk about International Women's Day and what the history is behind it and how it developed into Women's History Week. And then in 1987 became National Women's History Month. And we've had just kind of this growing movement around women's awareness about women's contributions to culture over the last, you know, few decades. And then the election happened. And then the Women's March happened on the 21st. And now we have a whole nother movement getting ready to take off tomorrow, A Day Without a Woman, and the International Women's Strike. And so it became even more important that we have this conversation today about what's going on in the world when it comes to women and women's rights and women's issues and the idea that without women contributing 2/3 of the labor to the workforce, we would not be able to run as a culture, as a country, as an economy. We couldn't run if women backed out of their paid and unpaid labor for just one day. So I'm kind of excited to see what happens tomorrow, to see if it continues the momentum that was started on the 21st. I'm curious to know what you're thinking about this idea of an international women's strike or a day without a woman tomorrow. Are you still feeling motivated? Are you still feeling excited and enlivened by the potential for change in our country? And I'm excited to talk to my guests today. I have two guests with me in the studio. Laura Grace and Zet Harber are both here to talk about their experience with women's issues, but also the upcoming 7th Annual Women's Symposium, which is this Saturday in San Luis Obispo. So we have a lot to cover, which I'm looking forward to. You are always invited to be part of the conversation at 805-781-3875. You can also find us on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. If you like the page, you'll get updates every week about the shows that are coming, or you can leave us a message. Let us know what's on your mind. You can also send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. And you can find our shows at kcbx.org under the News Talk tab. All of our shows are updated weekly, thanks to Bree, our powerful producer woman. And if you'd like to podcast the show to listen at your convenience, you can go to iTunes and search A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist, hit subscribe, and all the shows will be downloaded onto your device to listen at your convenience and to share with friends. And if you go to iTunes and subscribe, if you say something about it, it helps other people get the word about the show and what we're doing here. So it's always nice to pass it on, trying to grow the show. So, Laura Grace, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming in today.
Well, thanks for having me.
I think I shocked you because you're... Wait.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm really happy to be here.
Well, it's nice to have you back. And Zet, thank you for coming back in. We did this last year right before the Women's Symposium, and look forward to seeing what's gone on in your life since last year and what you're looking forward to this year.
Thank you. Yeah, it's wonderful to be back.
So I'm going to talk a little bit about kind of how we got to where we are tomorrow with the International Women's Day. And then I'm going to open it up to the both of you to talk about the Women's Symposium and where you see its role in what's happening right now in the world or in our country or even in San Luis Obispo County. So originally, the first International Women's Day was called the International Working Women's Day, and it was in 1909, and it was organized by the Socialist Party of America to bring about awareness about working women in society at that time. And if you think about it, it's an interesting time for an International Working Women's Day or celebration 1909, because we're still in the midst of the suffragist movement at that time. This predates the 19th Amendment, which was ratified in 1920. So women at this time were still, you know, a big part of the labor force, but had no representation in government or in politics whatsoever. So it was a really revolutionary idea to have the Socialist Party of America sponsor this International Working Women's Day. And it took off in different parts of the world, mainly in socialist and communist countries. And in 1917, the International Working Women's Day actually was part of the spark for the Russian Revolution, which, you know, changed the whole foundation of Russian politics for that time, or the Russian employment workforce. And then in 1977, the UN, the United Nations, adopted the International Working Women's Day and made it International Women's Day. And that kind of grew into this worldwide effort to bring about equality for women, awareness about violence against women and children. And just every year with a different theme since 1977, International Women's Day in the UN has been embraced by countries all around the world. So this year, the theme for tomorrow's day is Women in the Changing World of Work, Planet 50-50 by 2030. So it's interesting that in 1909, when this first started, it was all about this idea of finding equality for women in the workplace and having some sort of acknowledgement of the labor that's done by women, both paid and unpaid. And here we are in 2017, still having the same issues, still having the same conversation, still dealing with the great inequities between the work women do and the work that men do. And when we look at worldwide, 2/3 of the world's work is done by women. But on average, women only earn 50% of the income that men do. And not individually, but overall, the amount of income 2/3 of the women earn overall is only 50% of the income earned by men who are doing the other third of the work. Women produce half of the food in the world and only own 1% of the land. And 70% of those who are living in poverty today around the world are women and girls. And when it comes to literacy and the ability to move up socially or into the labor force, 2/3 of those who can't read or write today worldwide are women and girls. And so the United Nations theme about Planet 50-50 by 2030 is to start to bring about some gender equality, to bring about an awareness that we need to have more understanding of the paid and also unpaid labor that women do, which is at the heart of our society, that unpaid labor of caregiving for children, the elderly, the sick, that falls primarily on women. 75% of that labor falls on women, but goes uncompensated, really hinders a woman's ability to care for herself and for her family. So this theme of having 50-50 equality is not just about the equal rights or equal opportunities to be CEOs, but also to balance the responsibility for caring for those who need care in our culture, to empower men to step forward and take up a great portion of the care that's being done in our culture. So that's International Women's Day, which is tomorrow. In the 1970s in Sonoma, there was a school district that decided to focus a week on Women's History Week, and it took off and gained momentum. And in 1986, Congress declared March National Women's History Month. And so we have the month of March now revolving around this awareness about and celebration of women and all their contributions to the culture, to the world. And for tomorrow, in conjunction with the Women's March on January 21st, tomorrow is being called A Day Without a Woman. And the idea is to feel like, see what it feels like to not have women around for a day, either in the workplace or maybe making breakfast or doing the laundry or picking up for carpool or all the things that women do on a daily basis. Take one day, a day off to step back and to kind of celebrate the work that we do as women, and also to let the rest of the world see what it's like to not have our labor. So I guess I'm curious to know how you feel about this Day Without a Woman idea. Will you be participating? There are events all over the county that will be happening. And if you can't afford to take the time off of work, which is true for most women, they're asking that you wear red to work tomorrow in solidarity, that you don't shop, don't buy anything. 70-80% of all purchases in a household are done by women. So don't buy anything tomorrow. And if you can, make a donation of any amount to an organization that supports women. And I was thinking that Kiva is probably a great organization to start with, because they supply loans to help start businesses for women. Sign a petition, contact a representative about something you're passionate about, just some of the things that we might be doing or you might think about doing tomorrow. So along with all of these great opportunities to think about women and our contribution to the world and women's history, on Saturday is the 7th Annual Women's Symposium. And as I said at the start of the show, my guest today, one of my guests is Laura Grace, and you are the founder of the Women's Symposium. So start off telling a little bit about yourself and how you came up with the idea to have a Women's Symposium. Why do we need this, and what's happened over the last 7 years?
Okay, absolutely. It is happening this Saturday. It's our 7th annual symposium. And it came about because I had closed the doors to the Circle of Spiritual Enlightenment at San Luis Obispo. And I was looking for a way to become engaged and give back to our community. So I was walking in Labyrinth down in Los Olivos, and this idea came to me. But prior to that, I'd had a dream that also sparked this, which I won't get into right now. But I will share on Saturday at the symposium. But basically what I do is I'm a depth psychological and somatic practitioner. I'm a doctoral student, as I know that you know, at Pacifica Graduate Institute, and I do a lot of counseling with people. But my passion has always been women and really wanting to empower women on a core level. So this symposium to me is particularly timely with what's happening, not just when we always have it in the month of March for Women's History Month and to celebrate International Women's Day, but also because of what's happening politically right now in our country. And so I can't think of a better time to have the Women's Symposium for women to come together and get engaged, because we're waking up, basically, mm-hmm. right? We're waking up from the apathy that we've been asleep under, and we're getting engaged, and we want to stay awake right now. And what I'm looking at to empower the women like this Saturday is to hold to conscious activism. Not just be active and react from a place of upset or fear or anger, but really be mindful about how we're going to answer that call for action that we're all being called to respond to, and what really aligns with us on a core soul level. And so I think that's the driving force on Saturday. Also is to develop core resilience, because we're in this for the long run. We're not looking as women just to get engaged now because things are sticky. We're in a crisis mode. It's not like putting a bandage on a hemorrhage. We want to stay in this for the long haul. So Zet and I have been doing a series of podcasts on how to cultivate core resilience. It's about setting boundaries, personal care, self-care, things that really honor and nourish us so we can stay active in a way that is giving back in a positive way.
So you talk about, you know, being asleep and needing to wake up, or feeling that so many women are awakening at this moment, and people who love women, everyone is feeling awoken. But for the last 6 years that you were doing the symposium, what was the energy like before this year? You know, what...
Yeah, women, definitely a lot of the women that come to the symposium are active in the community in some way, shape, or form. But it's different now because we have the resistance movement. And I know from some women that I've heard from, they're not comfortable with that movement because they don't want to push back against something negative. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like Mother Teresa, so I'm not going to march on against the war, but I will on behalf of peace. So women are coming to terms with what does that look like for them. There's more activism happening now around this symposium than the last 6 years.
So do you feel more excitement and a different kind of excitement?
Yes, but still trying to find their way and really what activism means to them. So like looking at the resistance movement, some women are concerned that what we resist persists. Okay. So they don't want to push up against the negativity. But what I'm helping women understand is that there's a way to engage in resistance in a very positive way. And I think about Gandhi and his passive resistance and how he took that stand with the British back in, 1907? And that was a very effective, a very nonviolent way to take action and actually do it in a compassionate way. So I think we can walk that fine line of being resistant against those things that don't resonate of truth, while at the same time wholeheartedly embracing what does resonate of truth. And we can do it in a way that's very respectful and very compassionate.
Well, and it seems that a lot of the energy around women's issues for the last 10, 15 years, the conversation has really focused on women's empowerment and a lot of kind of this internal work and a lot of internal awakening for women. And it felt, less engaged in what was going on politically or socially or economically and much more of this personal focus. And so what I find interesting is that I'm hoping that all of this inner work women have been doing for the last 15, 20 years, exactly. Finally pays off and that we actually do something with that because, exactly. All of the awareness is for naught if we don't turn it out and do something big with it.
Exactly.
So Zet, mm-hmm. what brought you to the Women's Symposium? Because you are a traditional storyteller mm-hmm. and also a social alchemist, which I'm going to have you define. And what got you interested in doing this work?
Well, I was invited to the symposium a few years ago. And I was really happy to join in. At that time, it was... as it continues to be, but as you were saying, the energy is significantly different this year. But at that time, it was just this wonderful moment when we gathered together as women, for women, to be women, to listen to women, and to share. And it was very unique in my experience in San Luis Obispo County, and I've been here since, 30 years now. So then last year, I was invited by Laura to participate as a storyteller and social alchemist mm-hmm. and brought... A traditional folktale that has very strong archetypal themes, and then some framework that enabled everyone to connect more deeply to what was going on inside their own conversation and learn a new way of listening to themselves and others that I do in my Good Juju workshop. So that's how I got involved there. And social alchemy was a phrase that came to me because the whole science of alchemy the historically considered science of alchemy is about transforming an ordinary material into something magical and powerful and rich. And the story that launched me into storytelling was Rumpelstiltskin. And I'm sure most of us are familiar, but it's this little man who can spin straw into gold, and he saves the life of this young girl's father, and she becomes queen, and on and on and on. To me, that's what social alchemy is about. Supporting people, creating a framework within which we take the ordinary straw of our life and we begin to spin it into something magical and amazing and unexpected. So,
And I'm remembering the conversation we had last year was about storytelling and about the stories of women's lives and how, when we come together and support each other, we feel stronger in community than when we're by ourselves at home, and why the symposium is such a powerful idea because it gives women a place to come together and feel stronger in a group than behind our computer screens, signing petitions or trying to send out postcards. We're stronger in a group. So here we are a year later. And now we're being called to action. It's like all that preparation comes to be. And so I'm curious to know, how are people moving forward? What will tomorrow mean to you? Will you be participating in this Day Without a Woman? Our number is 805-781-3875. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. You're listening to Public Radio KCBX, 805-781-3875. My guests are Laura Grace and Zet Harbor. And we're kind of talking about this March magic of women. I don't know how else to put it. Women's History Month, International Women's Day, International Working Women's Day, the United Nations support for this idea of gender equality by 2030, Planet 50-50, they're calling it. And then this idea of a day without a woman. What would it be like without two-thirds of the labor force showing up? I read an article that said that in Alexandria, Virginia, they're closing 16 schools tomorrow because 300 women have called in for a day off for tomorrow. And so they're going to shut down the school district. And we're seeing different movements like this around the country. In Chicago, they're organizing an international women's strike about global wage injustice. In Seattle, they're having a strike back for reproductive justice. In Philadelphia, they're planning a strike in support of going 1,200 days without a contract for women workers. And in Durham, North Carolina, they're having an International Women's Day and the People Who Love a Woman on strike day. So there is a huge movement happening once again tomorrow. And is the energy there to propel it forward? What do you think?
Well, I think so. Like I said, I think we really are becoming engaged and activated. So from that respect, what's happening politically has been a gift. I know it's not always easy to see it that way, but we really are waking up. And I think it's important to keep in mind that many of us, myself included, I'm in my 50s working on my PhD, so I'm very aware of the fact that I have an opportunity to do things that many women on this planet cannot do. So I'm a privileged woman living a privileged life in our society. And so I really believe it's my responsibility to speak on behalf of women who are disadvantaged. And so it's not whether can I take action, should I take action. It's as just being a woman in this culture, it is my responsibility to take as much action, mindful action, as I possibly can right now.
Well, and you bring up a good point about, you know, being the privileged women, because I noticed that all three of us here would be considered the privileged white women. And yes. And it was not for lack of an effort to invite other people on to speak with us. And that was one of the issues, too. It's like, where are we all living in our little siloed worlds, even here in our best intentions to reach out and be more unified, more diverse, that we don't even run into each other on a day-to-day basis in our community to be able to come together? Which I see a day like the symposium being an opportunity for women of all different backgrounds, belief systems, political ideations to come together and try to find that common ground. And then for tomorrow, I know they're having an organized demonstration in San Luis Obispo. I think they're asking women to meet in Meadow Park from 10 to 10:30, and then there's going to be a march downtown. In Santa Barbara, they're having a gathering in De La Guerra Plaza with speakers and music and a knitting circle and this opportunity to come together. And I know that they're along with the Women's Day March, there is another group that's coordinated the Day Without a Woman. They're calling it an International Women's Strike, which has a little bit of a different tone to it. Although it's connected to the Day Without a Woman, the International Women's Strike is an effort that's been coordinated by women from 50 different countries. And like the organizers of the Women's March in Washington, it's very diverse in the backgrounds of the women who have organized this event and this effort. And I wanted to read a little bit of the writing from the International Women's Strike, what their focus is. They write, we are at the beginning of a new international feminist movement that organizes resistance not against Trump, but against his misogynistic policies and also against the conditions that produce Trump, namely the decades-long economic inequality, racial and sexual violence, and imperial wars abroad. And this idea of the International Women's Strike is organized around I think it's six different common principles. The first being an end to gender violence. The second being reproductive justice for all. The third being labor rights. And as we talked about, that's because women's paid labor in the workplace and the unpaid labor that's done at home is the basis of the wealth in our society and isn't recognized to any level or degree. The next common principle is full social provisioning, which is a call for universal health care, return of social services that have offered an important social net or a protection for women and children, and free education for all. Another principle is for an anti-racist and anti-imperialist feminism, which works against racist policies and the representatives in Congress. And then finally, environmental justice for all. And on the website also, you know, talks about fighting for the rights of transgendered people and for people of color and different backgrounds that seem to have been marginalized and kind of not included into the second wave or first wave of women's feminism. So I wonder, you know, are we setting ourselves up for more division? Does it feel inclusive? Do you feel like you're welcome to these events? Is it going to be an age thing? You know, is this a young woman's movement? does it feel like it's? I'm curious mm-hmm. to know. I'm curious to know what your experience is. If you're someone who's going to be marching tomorrow or demonstrating or taking a day off, what's motivating you to do it? Where are you in this? These ideas of the common principles that people are striking against or speaking out against. 805-781-3875. So, Laura, talk about your guest, your keynote speaker for Saturday.
Well, we're having Denise Lynn come in, and Denise Lynn is actually, she lived in Paso Robles for years. Now she's in Northern California, but she's a best-selling author, and she's a woman that has lived around the world in different indigenous cultures. So she brings a wealth of soulful energy and wisdom with her, and she's gone through her own personal hardships that have been transforming for her. She's in Mexico teaching right now with her daughter. So she'll be coming in talking about the sacred feminine and sacred space. And then in the afternoon, we have Heidi Harmon's going to be there sharing some, giving us an update. Dawn Addis will give us a very brief update of what's happening with women in our own community. And then Zet and I are doing a joint journey for women, archetypal journey in the afternoon, helping them to get connected to their deeper selves in order to take that mindful action that I was talking about earlier. So not just reacting, right, from that place of, you know, upset or fear, but really going within and finding what resonates deeply with them. I also wanted to touch on, a couple of years ago, we had Rhianne Eisler, as you know, as our keynote speaker. Really fortunate to have her. And she spoke to what you're bringing up about the inequality in pay with women, especially the unpaid portion of those women who are taking care of children, like my daughter. And many women are, and the women are taking care of our aging parents and not making any money at all doing that. So she was talking about that from the caring economy standpoint, which I know Zet's very well versed in. But until we really value that kind of work, there isn't money being paid to those people who are doing it. So I still think we're going through, you know, 108 years after, you know, International Women's Day, we're still not valuing those things that women are doing the majority of. And that's why the money is not yet showing up.
Well, from the perspective of someone who stayed home to raise her children, primarily was my primary job for 29 years, it was shocking to me to awaken at some point to realize, wow, I'm not gaining any Social Security. You know, that was, I don't know why it never occurred to me, because I didn't have to think about it. But just from that perspective, I thought, all this time I'm spending investing in raising the next generation, there's not a lot of esteem for that. And it's always been a concern for me that, you know, we put a lot of focus on making sure women earn the same income as men doing the same work, instead of valuing, right, reevaluating and esteeming the work that women primarily do, which is in the care industry and the service industry. If we were paying women the same money, the same amount of money for that work, equivalent to the work men are doing in other industries, that would be, to me, a huge step forward. Because even though we're calling for this idea of gender equality and men stepping up to take, you know, part of the care for those who are sick and children and for the elderly, I would like to first esteem that work as being so invaluable that we would pay, just like teachers, pay more for that because we value it as a culture. And yeah. What do you think, Seth?
Well, I'm so glad Laura brought up Rhianne. That's exactly what I was thinking about. And for me, it goes back to the idea that when you have a very rigid definition of what it is to be masculine or what it is to be feminine, then you limit what people can do and be and value. Mm-hmm. So because we live in what Rhianne has termed a dominator culture, for a male, you know, you really can't afford to be vulnerable. You can't afford to be slowing down enough to care for someone, to listen empathically, to nurture. And I'm not saying all men do or don't. I'm saying in these definitions that this sort of structural cultural structure.
Stereotype.
Correct. So when we say what makes a man, it's generally he's strong, he's fierce, he's outspoken, right? All those things. He's unafraid. And women, we think, oh, she's soft, she's kind, she listens well, she's polite, you know, all those things. So those narrow definitions, I believe, are an enormous part of why we're here. And so when I think about the Women's March tomorrow and even the Women's Symposium on Sunday, for me, it's that I would like to see the freedom to be a whole human being, be a gift that every gender has, all the genders, not just the two, all of them, that we all are entitled to be a full human being. I love Brené Brown, you know, her talk about vulnerability. It's tough enough as a woman to really be comfortable with your vulnerability, but we get to do it a lot more than men do. If we could create a culture where vulnerability is a really valued human experience, I think that would go a big way to helping us solve these issues.
Yeah, I like that story you were telling me before we started. What was that again?
Oh, I learned from a Lakota elder who came and shared stories. And, you know, this is my very, you know, boiled down version of it. But he was telling us a lot of story about Crazy Horse and his history and his life. And one of the things that has stuck with me is that Crazy Horse would only accept male warriors who could cry. So these men had to have access to their vulnerability, to their sorrow, to their caring and empathy in order for them to be genuinely strong and really fully valued warriors. And I think that goes for women as well as men. I think if we all can really connect to that, that strengthens us completely. So non-intuitive or something? Or
Counterintuitive. Counterintuitive. Yeah, You're listening to Public Radio KCBX. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. My guests today are Laura Grace and Zed Harbor. We're talking about A Day Without a Woman tomorrow, March 8th. Tomorrow is also International Women's Day. It's also being called International Women's Day of Strike. There's a lot of energy around what's happening for women and gender and labor in our country right now, and how do we grab onto this positive sense of resistance and keep momentum flowing? How do we come together and stay energized? We'll be back to take your calls in just a moment. 805-781-3875. This is Public Radio KCBX. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and I am curious to know where you are today when it comes to the energizing of women in our culture and around the world. Where do you stand at this moment? What is important to you? Those women from 50 countries who are organizing the International Women's Strike have organized around these common principles of ending gender violence, reproductive justice for all, labor rights, full social provisioning of universal health care, free education, fighting for anti-racist and anti-imperialist feminism, and fighting for environmental justice for all. And this all comes together this week through International Women's Day, Day Without a Woman. On Friday, the Indigenous People Rising March is happening in Washington, D.C. On Saturday, we have our 7th Annual Women's Symposium. In April, we have our March of the Scientists. I mean, it feels like it keeps building. There's so much excitement around it. And I'm wondering where are you in this moment, in this movement? So Laura Grace, what do you talked about, you know, feeling like providing the space for women to come together and take a positive action. For you personally, what does that look like? What do you feel your place in this moment at this time is?
Is to get really, really clear about what I feel needs to be done and to actually do it. Not to be so caught up in my own life or I'm so busy with this or that, and not to allow any of that to stop me anymore. And to really follow that path, which is connecting more deeply with my soul, but really really not becoming complacent, not falling back asleep, that there's much, much to be done. So I feel like right now I'm moving into high gear on that. But in a mindful, conscious way.
And what about you, Seth? What is calling to you at this time, different than a year ago?
Oh, yeah. So I think my biggest challenge or area of work is to continue to be engaged and informed without becoming overwhelmed and filled with despair. And so moment to moment, learning information from sources that I value and trust. I don't just open the gates and let anything flood in. And then saying, okay, what is the greater lesson here? What's the opportunity that we're being invited to grow into? Because every time we had to have adversity, we are being invited to grow. And it's not easy to see that right at the beginning, as Laura mentioned earlier. Yet, the sooner we ask ourselves that question, I think the sooner we get to triumph.
I have some ideas
that
I've been ruminating on a lot, and I'm just going to throw them out there. One is I want women to run for office, and there's a lot of organizations right now, the ACLU for one, that are offering workshops and programs to help women run for office. And that's all from the school board up to local legislation and state legislation to Congress. We need to run for office. Women need to run for office. And men who support feminine agenda need to run, because if we're talking about gender equality, we're talking about both men and women. And then I had another idea that if a lot of the young people that are feeling so fired up about what's happening today, a lot of the millennial energy about resist and fighting back, move to a red state for 2 years and vote in their next election. If we could flood the red states with differing opinions and have everyone kind of congregate in their areas of comfort in the blue state areas of safety to move into these red states, you have a better cost of living and more job opportunities, and you could change the whole course of the election season, kind of go to where the resistance is. And then also the idea of instead of just, you know, not just, but instead of taking the time to make phone calls, to write down what it is you care about and send it to every congressman out there, even though people feel like you should only talk to your local congressman because someone outside your district won't care. I think enough of the same voices being sent out to every person in political power does have an influence, even if it's not just from their district. So those are three things that keep floating around in my head. 805-781-3875. Hi, Julie, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Well, I've been listening to this conversation, and when you talk about vulnerability, what really bothers me is that I've been in the workplace for 50 years, and in that time, I have been bullied and terrorized by other women.
There you go.
And that really bothers me. I'm a very sensitive, vulnerable person, and if I was to get upset or showed tenderness or sensitivity, I was laughed at and ridiculed by other women. And I want to address why women bully other women.
Hmm. Well, I'm going to hand that over to Laura Grace. Thank you. Thank you, Julie.
Yeah, thank you so much for bringing that up, Julie. There is something that we are butting up against as women called internalized oppression. And I think it's a really important concept to understand, which means an example of internalized oppression, and you're referring to it by being bullied by other women, is that we are self-loathing of our own gender. So if we were brought up in a patriarchal system as a young girl, we could have been taught to really revere the male and disrespect the female. And we do see this playing out in our society. So there are women who are having a really hard time with the fact of resistance. There are women who are really revering what's happening. They revere people who are in leadership roles in Washington and think that's the way to go. Women who really hated Hillary because she is a woman. So we have to understand what's happening. This is a dynamic that we're all feeling to some extent in certain parts of our culture. So if a woman is internalizing oppression, then she's having a really hard time embracing the qualities that Zet was bringing up of vulnerability and the qualities that women are known for, because that would not have been something that she would have been supported in embracing when she was growing up. And I know women right now who have people like I'm just going to, you know, Trump on a pedestal and really think that what he's doing is wonderful and are ignoring the violations against women that we have seen come out and through this election. Does this make sense? So when we're feeling oppressed on a pretty deep level, we're not even conscious of it. We then sometimes end up portraying ourselves in ways that push away the feminine and push away those qualities of tenderness and vulnerability and can make us very competitive with other women. And that's something that can be very painful and confusing. But this is something that goes much deeper than the current situation. This is something deep in psyche that goes back many, many years. And this is a generational issue. Internalized oppression goes back thousands of years.
Well, and I think also with Julia, because she said she's been in the workforce for 50 years, that one of the things we've seen post-feminist movement was this the competition for work in a man's world. So they're competing against men and then against other women for those few slots allotted to women in a man's world, which sets up this competition that also can cause bullying. So I think there is a lot of that. And what's interesting is that men bully each other also in the workplace, but it's seen differently as competition that's kind of revered by the masculine aggression. But when women bully or are competitive with each other, it's, you know, it's from a personal place. It feels like it's being a personal attack and not just about business. So there's
very relational. So relationships for women, we're hardwired to connect. we honor right connection over individuality. So I can very much empathize with what Julie's going through of feeling.
And when I brought up the idea of if there's a lot of energy coming from different directions and different ways that women see the world, and it can make it a challenge to come together in any kind of unity.
Yeah, I love what both of you are saying. Absolutely. When we're arguing over the scrap of pie that's available, people do get mean and desperate. And it reminds me again of Rian's work with the dominator culture. She explains that in a dominator cultural framework, you have two choices. You can dominate or be dominated. Mm-hmm. Being dominated is not the most appealing option, right? So many of us, male or female, we've adopted some dominating characteristics and behaviors. Or we try to just escape it altogether and not play in that playing field at all. Or we experience what Julie experiences, which is being at the receiving end of domination.
Or feeling attacked because you bring a different sentiment or temperament to the workplace.
Yes.
805-781-3875. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Yes, I just want to tell you that I'm 81 years old, and I've never felt like I didn't have any rights. I've always felt like I've had rights, and if I wanted to do something, I could do it. I traveled all over the world. I got married and had six children. It just seems funny that these women, they must feel very insecure to do what they're doing, all these marches.
And
can't they get out and do what they want to do? Because I just feel like Hillary has been abused, the most abused woman on this earth was her husband, what he did to her. And I wish you would stop talking bad about Trump because his main advisor is a woman. Mm-hmm. I don't understand it.
Well, and I appreciate your perspective because, again, that brings up to the point what I mentioned earlier in the show is that we aren't all coming with one unified perspective on the world and one unified lens about what's happening in the world and the opportunities. And I think it's very difficult when you've had a privileged lens in the world, when you've had opportunities, when you've never felt oppressed, you've never felt like your rights were marginalized and you were able to do whatever you wanted, it's really difficult to feel empathy for anyone else's experience. And I think that's one of the challenges that for so many people, especially in this country, who have had a privileged experience, have been able to make choices, been able to go to college and get jobs and never felt like they're oppressed, that it's really hard to understand the voices of people who are saying that wasn't my experience. And I think part of the work, no matter what our age is to be able to open our hearts and open our eyes to the experience of people that aren't us. I think that's an ongoing challenge that I experience the older I get, is to maintain the sense of openness to the generations coming up behind me and to be able to appreciate their experience in the world is different than mine was 25, 30 years ago when I was a young mom, and to be able to be open to what they are encountering. And I think that's our job at 60, 70, 70, 80 years old, is how do we, you know, grow in our appreciation for everyone else's lens and worldview and not close down and not feel threatened by the opinions and experiences of others. Thank you for taking the time to call. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And today we're talking about the energy around women in culture and around the world, around this idea that started in 1909 with the International Working Women's Day that was started by the Socialist Party of America, which actually had some traction in 1909 and then was adopted in Russia and was the spark for the 1917 Russian Revolution. This idea that women in 1909 through 1917 through, you know, 1940 into today were not being esteemed for what they were offering to culture. Two-thirds of the labor is done in the world by women who earn only 50% of the income that men do for the third of the labor that they do. And so where do we go from here? 1909, International Working Women. 2017, the UN has called for Planet 50-50 by 2030 to address things like reproductive justice, labor rights, ending poverty for women. 70% of those living in poverty around the world are women and young girls. They also have the least access to education, to the opportunity to learn to read and to write. And without those skills, it's very difficult to join the labor force, and protection for women who choose the caring role, to be the stay-at-home parent, to be the emotion worker, to provide for the health and well-being of their children and their neighbors and their grandparents. I personally feel like there is nothing of more value in our culture than that work. And that esteeming that work and holding these women for the sacrifices and men that they do, that they have offered to give their lives to another human being, that's profound work. That's soul work. That's heart work. And it's unfortunate that we need the economic support to be able to live in our culture, because if we really just focused on the heart work, we'd probably all be in a better place. 805-781-3875. My guests today are Laura Grace and Zet Harbor, and we're talking a bit about the Women's Symposium that's this Saturday, March 11th, from 8:30 to 3:30. And Laura Grace, your guest speaker this month or this year is Denise Lynn. And talk a little bit about what her speaking is going to be about, what her speech is going to be about, and how people can get involved if they still want to come on Saturday. Are there tickets still available?
Yeah, tickets are still available. They can get them at the door. It's better if they order them ahead of time. They can go to www.spiritualcircle.org/symposium. That's a lot.
That's a lot.
Let's just do spiritualcircle.org, and then you'll see the tab at the top for the Women's Symposium. So you can buy tickets now. We still have some room left. It's going to be a full day. We have a lot going on. Denise Lynn is amazing in the work that she brings to the table. I've had amazing keynote speakers ever since we started. We've had Dr. Joan Borisenko and Rihanna Eisler and Dr. Jean Houston. The list goes on and on. Denise comes from a little bit different perspective because of the life that she's lived on this planet in different indigenous cultures. She's coming from a more organic place from my standpoint, and I've had some really nice contact with her. She's bringing a lot of soul, and I use that word a lot because I think it's a word that we're not using enough in our culture. She brings a lot of soul and heart to this symposium. She's a very real, hands-on, heart-oriented woman, and she does a lot of great work with her daughter, who she's just mothered in such a beautiful way. They do a lot of work around the world with the teachings, creating sacred spaces for women, and really getting in touch with our roots. She's a Mother Earth kind of woman in terms of her leadership, mm-hmm. and she has a Native American Indian background. So a lot of, you know, really connection with the earth, and I love that piece about her.
So if people want to come on Saturday, is it open to men and to women?
No, it's, and I know, and this year, not surprising, right, with all the energy that's going on, I've had more men want to come, and women want to bring, you know, their men than ever. But now it's a symposium, and it's just women, because there's something about holding the space for just women that when men do come into it, it does change things. It really does change the dynamic, so my husband will be there in the morning to get the sound set up, and then he's out of there. He leaves, but it's just for women. Yeah.
From 8:30 to 3:30.
Yes.
And Zet, what are you looking forward to moving forward? Not just on Saturday, but moving forward in your work. What What are you being called to do at this time?
Thank you. Yes, well, as a storyteller for now 25 years, from the very beginning, it seemed really important to me that as a human, for me, and in general, other folks, that we connect more deeply and understand what is the story I hold about myself. Mm-hmm. Because I have seen over and over, I'm sure you have too, that the story we believe we have about ourselves is the story we live out. I mean, Anne is a perfect example. So I have been really investing my energy into reaching out to people and creating frameworks where people can connect to their story. So often we're not even aware that we have a story. And so just awakening people to the understanding that story is already in play, that we actually have choices about what that story can be, what it can look like. And for me, drawing on the traditional folktales is wonderful because they're mirrors that give us so many options about who we can be and what life can be, how it can be different than what we experience in our contemporary culture, which I feel has very limited images for men and women.
So I'm hearing you say that maybe you're being called to help expand how we identify who we are in the world and what our potentials are, what our opportunities are.
Yeah, like the idea is when you know who you are, the rest is easy. Mm-hmm. And that goes deeper than just knowing I'm a woman in America, blah, blah, blah. I'm this human being and I have at my disposal all these emotional experiences that inform me and evolve me and enable me to become more fully who I am here to be. So I offer workshops. Currently, they've been for women. They're called the Good Juju Workshop. I also have men asking to do that. So we're going to offer a co-ed version and a woman's version, because not only does it change for women when men are involved, but for men, for a male-only gathering, when women come in, it shifts the energy. It's natural. So a co-ed energy is different, and I'm really interested in embracing that moving forward. But I love to hold the space for women because we so rarely, I feel, sit in a space together and are invited to speak equally and be listened to equally with value.
And so the not skeptic, but the devil's advocate in my head keeps saying, I hear what you're saying, but I don't know if that's the energy that a lot of these new movements, the International Women's Strike, you know, the young women who have come together to put together the Women's March on Washington. Part of me feels like they're calling for more than just this internal exploration of ourself and our needs and our feelings and our vulnerability. It's like, you know what? That's important, but you've got to at some point get over yourself and start working for the common good of everything outside of us. Yeah. And that maybe it's not going to feel good. And maybe we're not going to feel accepted. And maybe we're not going to get our way. And maybe we're going to have pushback. We're going to have a government that tries to turn back everything that's of value to us. Mm-hmm. And that you're going to have to be aggressive and stand up and maybe be bullied. Because you're standing up for something. Like there's a part of me that feels like the mantra that I grew up with, and because we're all of a similar age, this idea of, you know, kind of trying to own our own strength and our own story. I don't know if that's the story that's really of most value for a lot of the younger women that are coming up, that they're over that piece of it and saying it's not about me anymore. It's about something bigger and larger that we have to attach ourselves to.
Yeah, I hear exactly what you're saying. And I think that ultimately, well, in working with Rianne Eisler, I trained with her for a year. And she said, you know, there are four different ways you can approach this. You know, you can change the story, you can go out and do action, and there were other things. So this isn't, again, you know, we're sitting here with me and Laura who are in, you know, we're both into soul work and depth and all of that. I agree with you. Action must come as a result of this. I'm not sure that I can act with strength and courage if I do not understand who I am. And I think knowing this story about what's going on culturally that you've shared with us today is absolutely essential to understand that we do have something to overcome, because if you don't know that, then you don't think you do. Mm-hmm. And I think you can march for something much more strongly than you can march against anything.
Absolutely. So. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. And Richard, we want to draw you into the conversation today. Welcome.
Yes, hi. I want to give you, you talked about politics and the political, getting people trained for political life. I want to just remember some of the early political women that were in politics in San Luis Obispo County.
Well, give us a couple names.
1973 on the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission, Anna Alexander was the first woman commissioner, and Jacqueline Hines was the first woman commissioner, District 3. Anna Alexander was in District 5, and Ruth Worship was the first woman on the Human Relations Commission. And so these were the first three women in our county that were on any kind of county commissions. And also in 1975, the first San Luis Obispo County Commission on the Status of Women, there were three women that I can remember. There were probably 10 at the time that were appointed, two for each of the county supervisors. Carol Norton and Isabel Phillips were my commissioners, and Liz Appleberg was commissioner in District 3. I don't remember the other seven women, but those are names I think that should be enshrined someplace. And if somebody out there wanted to find out about history of women in politics in San Luis Obispo County, they would look up these names.
Those are a great place to start, Richard. And as we wrap things up today, I want to thank Laura Grace and Zed Harbor for coming in and sharing their story. Saturday is the Women's Symposium. Yes. To get tickets and find out more,
go to spiritualcircle.org, and you can sign up right there.
And you can find Zet at?
ZetHarbor.com and TheJujuCompany.com.
And if you're looking to participate tomorrow in A Day Without a Woman, things are happening all over the country, all over the county. People will be meeting at Meadow Park tomorrow morning from 10 to 10:30, in Santa Barbara at De La Guerra Plaza, in Monterey at Cal State Monterey Bay. They're sponsoring a panel workshop. You can find out more on their website. If you want to participate, if you want to be part of a collective consciousness tomorrow and you can't walk out of your job, wear red. Speak up about something that you care about on your social media. Make a donation of any kind, any amount, to an organization that you're passionate about. If you want to support women in their labor, look at Kiva, because they offer loans to women and people trying to start small businesses. Sign a petition, handwrite a letter to a representative about something you're passionate about. You just simply have to write your name and where you're from and urge your state representative to take an action that you care about. And take some time to notice a woman in your life or a woman who's near you and say hello. Because I think what we hear over and over again is that this divide amongst women of different generations, of different colors, of different religions, of different politics, that's going to hurt us more than any person in power. And so to take time to get to know each other on a personal level, to say hello, to embrace each other, that's where our power lies. And this has been A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. You can find me on my Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, or send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can podcast our shows through iTunes. And as always, I appreciate you supporting public radio, KCBX. Find your sisters and brothers who can hear all the truth in what you say. They can support you when you're on your way. It's your day, a woman's day. It's your day, a woman's day. Soon you're gone, soon you're gone. We are shaking the tree.